Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to try to get started on time. My name is Dustin Velusic, and welcome to the School for Successful Ranching. I'll be moderating this session today. At this time, I'd ask you to place all your cell phones on silent and remove your hats. There's some tables in the back that you can put them on. We'd like to take this time and thank our generous sponsors for the School of Successful Ranching for their support of this program. They have small displays set up in the hallway on this floor, and we ask that you visit with booths here around the expo and give them a holler and just go out and meet them and thank them for their support. Our sponsors include Capital Farm Credit, Dow AgriSciences, Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, Lone Star Ag Credit, Merck Animal Health, Stay Tough Fence Manufacturing, Bayer, Micro Technologies, Decero, Texas Range Minerals, Neogen GeneSeq, Rabo AgriFinance, Texas Beef Quality Assurance, and Silvis Insurance Group. If you're a new TSCRA member, we'll be holding a new member orientation today at 1 p.m. in room 101. We hope that you can learn more about the TSCRA and what it does for the cattle industry. Our first presentation is developing a herd nutrition plan presented by Dr. Steve Blesinger. Steve Blesinger and his wife Linda own and operate Reveille Livestock Concepts, a consulting firm that works with a variety of operations in both the beef and dairy industries, as well as a variety of companies that serve the animal nutrition industry. For the last 25 years, Steve has assisted a large number of cattle producers in development of nutritional management programs, which focus on improving and optimizing animal performance and growing operations profits. Steve's philosophy is to maximize the use of producer on-farm resources, building, allocating feed and supplementation to best meet animal requirements, to promote health, reproduction, and overall performance. He believes that education of producer clients is critical to help them develop a thorough understanding of the importance of nutritional programs and development and management. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Steve Blesinger.
Thanks, Dustin. You guys hear me okay? All right. I'm asking because myself and lapel mics don't normally get along real well, so I'll go from there. Appreciate you guys coming out this morning. I don't know that I would have gotten up at 8:30 on a Saturday morning to come listen to me speak, but I do appreciate it very much. And we're going to try to cram 100 years worth of nutrition research and practice and philosophy into about 45 minutes. And so we'll do the best we can. One thing I want to comment about in the course of just the next few minutes that we're going to spend together is I'm pretty informal. And so if you see something that you want to know about right then and there, don't try to remember it. Stick your hand up and let's talk about it. I mean, this needs to be a discussion and not a lecture. A little bit about myself and my wife Linda, who's here with me this morning. Like Dustin said, we have a nutritional consulting company, which is Reveille Livestock Concepts. We also have I don't know what I just did, but anyway. And we also have a supplement company, which is ABC Nutrition Service. And over the last 25 years, we've been working with beef and dairy producers all over Texas, kind of all over the Mid-South, and with the consulting company, we work all over the U.S. and we do some international stuff. So we've had a really interesting few years and kind of given us an interesting perspective on how the business works. So we're going to talk today about nutrition and building a nutrition plan for a beef cattle operation, and specifically for the kind of cattle operations we have here in Texas and Oklahoma and Louisiana, Arkansas, things like that, which are, you know, for the most part are little smaller operations. You know, probably the average cow herd in the United States is around 40 or 50 head, maybe even less than that. And so that creates a set of challenges for producers that, you know, some bigger operations don't necessarily have. But the one thing is that we do know is that nutrition programs in general are wide-ranging in scope and in detail. The fact that some are very simple, they're grass and hay. If they can't get it from pastures or around bale, they ain't going to get it. That is the cattle operation that I grew up on. That was my dad's philosophy. Every once in a while, he might go buy a bag of range cubes just so that he could get them into the pen. He might decide, oh, we really need a mineral program. And his mineral program was a red block and a white block. And that was pretty much it. The other side of that coin is we have the ones that are extremely complex. I've had several clients over the years that were, we got any engineers in the room? Okay, not to offend you guys, but the engineer clients we have had always overthink this stuff. And so we end up with extremely complex management and nutrition programs that ultimately end up costing them a whole lot of money before it's all over with. But, but now I have to say, most of them are pretty carefully designed, but then you run into the ones that are really complex that they kind of take the shotgun approach. By gosh, we're going to throw a little of something of anything that we can think of at them, and hopefully we're going to be covering the bases. Again, unfortunately, either one of those approaches leaves something to be desired. The simple program, you're generally compromising animal performance, whether it's breeding, health, growth. I forgot to add milk production because we're in the business to produce milk. And the operation's losing money because those animals are not performing optimally. And the overly complex operation, because of the extensive array of supplements that they may be using, they end up spending too much money. They're throwing money at stuff just because they're trying to cover all their bases. And in a lot of cases, it actually is depressing performance because we're overfeeding some things. If we overfeed protein, for instance, especially like to heifers, you're going to have a hard time. They're going to struggle with getting bred because they're directing energy resources to clearing all that extra protein out of their system. So we want to be kind of careful about that. All right. The one thing we want to remember, though, looking at this from 30,000 feet, as you might say, is that every single operation is different. Not sure how many people are in this room, but if each one of you has a cattle operation, every single one of your operations is different in some shape, form, or fashion. And it's one reason why just because your neighbor's doing something doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work for you. Just because you go to the feed store or to the coffee shop, and that was a struggle I had with my dad for years and years, is that I would talk to him about his cattle operation, you know, and this is after I was educated way beyond my intelligence, and was telling him, Dad, you really ought to be doing this. And his thing was, well, yeah, no, Fred down at the coffee shop said that I need to do this, and that's what I'm going to do. And so you have to remember that you need to be looking at your operation and how your operation is built. So additionally, many producers only consider their nutritional program at a given moment. They run into, we come up into August or September, and they're thinking, I'm going to have to probably feed these cattle something once we get a cold snap. I'll go check out, and we'll look at what the range cubes are going to cost, or I'll go look at what tubs, XYZ feed store has, that type of thing. And that's a little short-sighted. They approach the feeding season generally fall and winter, and need to provide a forage source. You know, there's lots of different ways we can go about doing that. They also decide at that point that they need to provide a mineral or a protein, again, without a lot of advance notice. What I'm telling you is that you need to be thinking about your feeding program or your supplementation program that's coming up. Okay, we're in 2018. We're coming out of winter, hopefully. It ain't Easter yet. We could still get a freeze, I guess, between now and then. But we're coming out of spring, or coming into spring rather, into summer, and this is when you need to be thinking about how you're going to supplement and manage and provide for the nutrition for those animals. But once we get into the fall and winter, you need to be thinking about that stuff well in advance. Again, this reduces or eliminates the option to plan properly and evaluate feeding and supplementation options when you're just kind of doing it off the cuff or you know, at the you know, when you think about it, I guess I would say. And in many cases, because of the lack of planning, the main consideration is the unit cost of a feed or supplement. The only thing that's really being considered is how much is this costing me per bag? How much is it costing me per ton? Not looking at it from the standpoint of what is my return on investment. Okay, in the beef industry, we have a constant, unwavering need to maximize efficiency and revenue. Now, recognize this does not say maximize production, because that's two different things. Maximizing production and what it costs to maximize production is not necessarily directly related to efficiency. For instance, at high levels of reproductive performance, the cost of increasing calving percentage, only one unit may actually reduce net farm revenues. And I'll give you an example. A number of years ago, we worked with a ranch over in western Louisiana. They ran about 12, 13, 1400 cows. We made some changes to their program, and on the average, they were having a calving percentage that ran about 93, 94%, which is pretty stinking good for an operation that deals with that kind of heat stress pretty much year-round, has to deal with all the other challenges they have, internal parasites, flies, things of that nature. But they wanted to look at, okay, we're at 94% calving percentage, or however you want to refer to that number. They looked at it from the standpoint of the number of cows exposed to the number of calves that they weaned. So that they were running about 94% on that. They wanted to say, okay, what's it going to take for us to get to 95, to 96, 97%? I mean, they wanted to get to 100%. All of us would like to get to 100%. But when we analyzed the cost on that, it was so much more expensive to try to get to that extra 1% that they backed off and they decided, okay, we're good where we are. Because we have a set, and in their case, what they were running into was being able to manage or feed those cattle beyond the stress levels that those cows were under. And that's a very major concern when you're looking at what your nutrition program is, stress level. Okay, since nutrition as a whole is the single biggest annual production expense for most operations, and we're not talking about your equipment expense, we're not talking about your animal expense, we're talking about your regular year-to-year or annual cost of doing business on a ranching or farming operation. You want to plan your program as completely as possible, and you want to understand that this is a dynamic situation that requires constant monitoring and forward thinking. You know, you've heard the term moving target. Well, nutrition for a cow herd, anywhere that you see it, is a collection of moving targets, and we'll talk about a few of those. All right, the typical cow-calf operation is built on a forage base. Now, I'll qualify this by saying I know of a few confinement-fed cow-calf operations that are in place that have been used quite a bit, like when we've been in drought conditions, but there are some folks kind of out in West Texas and up in the Panhandle that are running cow herds in a feedlot, and seems to work okay, but if you ain't got a feedlot, you know, you're probably better to have your cows on grass. The forage base is made up of whatever ranch, farms, pastures, and harvested forage production. Now, I'll tell you, we go west of here, you're going to see a lot of operations that will run on whatever the growing grass is, and then on stockpiled forages. They're not going to be using a lot of harvested forages, not a lot of hay, not a lot of silage, you know, things of that nature. The largest amount of dry matter, and we'll talk about that in a second, and nutrients come from these forages. Now, you'll hear me refer to the term dry matter. And this is something we use particularly for ruminants or cattle because we have such a variety of different nutrient sources with different moisture contents. If we look at dry hay, if you look at a bale of dry hay, that dry hay, on the average, is going to run 88 to 90% dry matter. It's maybe 10% moisture. But if we look at a bale of silage, you've seen and some of y'all may be feeding, you know, baleage or where your bales are put up at about 50% dry matter. The only way we can compare those two is if we take the moisture out of the picture and look at it on a dry basis. And that changes those numbers, and I'll show you here in a second. In many cases, especially in the various locations around the country that have been affected by drought conditions over the last few years, these forages had to be purchased from other areas and could not be produced on the farm. Now, the other side of that is there are a lot of farming operations that don't produce any of their own harvested forages. They don't produce any of their own hay. They buy everything that they want to feed. And I'll give you a perfect example. This is the small cattle operation we have. We don't have enough acres in order to both put up or run cattle and put up hay, so we just buy everything. Now, I'm going to take a second right here, and I'm going to get on my soapbox for a minute, because this is one of the probably, the way we buy hay in the beef cattle industry, and I don't care where you are, well, it's probably worse here in the Mid-South than it is up north. The one thing that we do the worst is we go out and we buy hay based on a bale. We'll go out, okay, I need to buy 10 bales of hay to keep these cows going. I need to buy 100 bales. I need to buy 300 bales. The problem we've got is we're going out and spending money on something we don't know what we've got. We go out and you go to buy something, and I would be willing to bet that every one of you may have done this in some shape, form, or fashion, but you go to somebody who has hay to buy, and you'll ask them, what do you think that bale weighs? And they was, oh, that's an 1,100 or 1,200-pound hay bale. And I'll tell you that the average hay seller and the average hay buyer doesn't have the first clue how much that bale of hay weighs. Because going back to like the dry matter thing we were talking about, when you start looking at moisture content, it has a dramatic effect on how much that bale weighs. So you're going out there and you're spending X number of dollars per bale of hay, and you don't know how much you're buying. My question is this, if you're going to go down to the feed store and buy a 50-pound bag or a bag of feed, do you not want to know how much that bag of feed weighs? Of course you do. If you want to buy bulk feed and they're going to ship it to you, do you not want to know what the weight is of what you just bought? Of course you do. Why do we not do the same thing with our hay in the beef cattle industry? And I would tell you that that right there is probably the one thing that across the board our industry does the worst. If you go to the dairy industry, those guys buy hay based upon really two different things. They buy it based upon weight. They know specifically, if they buy a truckload of hay, they know specifically how many pounds they're getting. They also have an idea of what the protein content is and what the relative nutrient value of that hay is. We generally don't. A few folks actually probably do that okay, but not most of us. Okay, off of my soapbox. Yes, sir. Not many of them.
I test everything myself. I also take it to the truck stop, and I weigh my truck empty, and I weigh it.
Thank you.
And so, how do I know per bill how much I'm getting? Because I'm like one of those persons. I need 100 bills.
Yeah.
And I go to her, and I say, I need 100 bills.
That's part of the problem. The part of the problem is what you're doing is few and far between. But as an industry, what we need to be doing, what you need to be doing, is you need to be going to your hay supplier and say, this is what I need. I need to know what these bales weigh. I need to have an idea of what the protein or the nutritional value is. Will you provide that for me? And will you sell this hay to me based upon weight? Will you sell this to me based upon this bale weighs 1,200 pounds, or base it on that. Come up with a number that you're willing to spend on this amount of hay. Just use 1,000 pounds. I'm willing to give you $30 for 1,000 pounds of hay. And then you know, go ahead and have them, if they deliver to you, do what you guys are doing and weigh that, you know, weigh that load so you know what you're getting. It's not going to happen overnight, but the only way it will happen is if the producers who are buying hay push it and push the factory. Like I said, you guys are the exception of probably 90% of the hay suppliers that I'm familiar with. Some are doing it, you know, with for beef cow hay, but not many. So I appreciate what you're doing. So that's exactly. You have another question? You bet. Okay. Now, the nutrient values of the forage base are dynamic. And what that means is they change depending upon the time of the year. They change depending upon a whole variety of different things. The following slide is going to illustrate typical crude protein values for a beef cattle forage base. And this is coming from data out of Central Texas, you know, different farms for the most part producing coastal Bermuda grass hay. In the months of March through October, forage nutrients are provided predominantly through pasture, while November through February, forage nutrients are provided by hay, and that's where this next slide that you're going to see is. So what we're looking at here is these are average values, but this is what you typically see in terms of crude protein content for a forage base in Central Texas on a farm that is using coastal Bermuda grass as their forage base. We're in January, we're still feeding hay. February, we start seeing coming up because we're starting, especially in the southern parts of the state, we're seeing the coastal beginning to come out. By the time we get to March and April, you know, assuming that we're not overgrazing or anything like that, we're starting to see that protein come up. Keep in mind that for a mature cow, your average protein requirement is somewhere around 10 to 11%, somewhere in that ballpark. But then once we get into May, June, by the time we're into July, we're starting to see it go down. Now, the other thing is that we see here is that during this period of time, we're also harvesting a lot of the hay or the haylage that we might be producing. So those numbers should be up there, but they're not always. They're not a lot. So that by the time we get in August, we get a little bit of a bump in September, and then out here October, November, December, and back to January, we're typically feeding a lower protein product. Again, what did I say earlier about this? Every operation is different. This curve changes if you come in here and you plant and use small grain pastures, oats, wheat, or things like winter pastures like ryegrass, rye, that type of thing. It changes this. So that's the thing to keep in mind. This goes back to what we said earlier, that everybody's a little different. So nutrient, and just like we see changes in the, yes, ma'am. That was actually fertilized hay. Now, but let's talk about that a little bit more, because that's a great question. What we run into here is, like I said, remember that I said that this slide is averages, and that's averages over lots of operations over lots of years. Because when we come in, and we come in, and it, depending upon what your fertilization program is, and probably even bigger, what your environmental conditions are like, when did you get your rainfall, this changes this curve. It may extend it out, it may shorten it up. The thing that we normally see, again with coastal Bermuda grass, is by the time we're getting in here to June and July, we normally start seeing these grasses get a little, what we refer to them as getting a little rank. You know, if you're not grazing them real heavily and they start getting more mature, what you end up getting is more fiber. We see more lignin. We see lower digestibility. That's another thing that we have to take into consideration on these forages. What's the digestibility on this stuff? So fertilization changes this. Moisture levels change this. There's a whole variety of how you harvest your hay changes this. So, and that's why we're going to get to a fairly important part here in just a second. I want to tell you a quick story about this based upon what your question was on the fertilization thing. I had a guy that I worked with a number of years ago who's down in East Texas, and he was particularly proud of his ability to put up good quality coastal Bermuda grass hay. And he called me one day. He said, "Hey, we just got done putting up a bunch of hay." He said, "Man, we cut it right. We fertilized it right. We had just, rain was just perfect. And stuff is beautiful green. Come down here and test this. Let's see what it looks like." Well, I did. And I went, and he was going, "Oh man, this stuff is fantastic. It's going to easily test 12-14% protein." We went down there, I pulled samples on it, sent it off to the lab, came back, tested 7.4%. He was a little bit on the agitated side. He said, "Oh, you did something wrong. You must have not sampled this right. Something was wrong. Come down here and do it again." So I went down there, we did it again. Pulled samples on his hay, came back 7.2. By this point in time, he wasn't even talking to me anymore. It was like he was just frustrated beyond belief. The point being is this, is that despite you doing everything right, this is Mother Nature we're talking about, and Mother Nature has her own ideas. And so the only way to know what you're doing, we'll talk about in a second. Yes, sir. All righty.
Say August through December, is that the grass that's still on the ground that you're grazing, or is that the hay that you're feeding?
It's just forage supply. It is just whatever it may be, because like I said, everybody's a little different, and when we were doing graphing this data based upon the averages, in some cases it was what you were grazing, in some cases it was, you know, some got people that had drier years and they were starting to feed hay earlier, you know, things like that. So the whole point, and that's my whole point, is the fact that, you know, while this is average numbers, it can be either way. It can be whether you're grazing or not. But the thing is, your farm has its own curve, and your farm has, or a ranch has, a curve that changes from year to year. So, and we'll get into this. Yes, sir.
So if you harvest that 12-13% hay
up there,
and you feed it in November,
It should bring that.
How much protein is it going to lose of that hay?
None.
It's still going to be the same.
Yeah, if you're cutting, let's say for instance, you actually do have hay in May, June, July. That is, if you go out there and you test the grass, and it comes in at 13%, and you cut it at that point in time, You've essentially, within reason, locked that nutrient in. About the main thing you're going to lose is vitamin A, is the main thing that you lose in that situation. However, the other thing that you can potentially lose, let's say for instance if you store that hay in a barn, or if you stack it and you cover it, or something like that, you're going to do a better job of saving those nutrients. You can get, if it's just sitting out there in the open for 6 months, yeah, you're going to see some deterioration somewhere or another. But for the most part, you're locking it in, but that may not be the exact best number. Yes, ma'am. Right. Right. More than likely. Yes. Yeah, because it's wherever you stop the growth process. Because, you know, up to that point in time, I mean, literally, especially in this time of the year, right in through here, you're literally changing the nutrient values on like growing Bermuda grass, whatever, on a daily basis. If you go in and you test it today and you bale it 2 weeks from now, you got two different numbers. Yes, sir.
So what you're saying is that the protein or the measurement of crude protein in the grass or hay, whatever that is not based on the moisture content?
No, it's not based on the moisture content, but if you look at it, you know, like versus, you know, if we test it today or whatever, you know, test it today and we look at the what we'll call the as-fed value of it, it might be 8%. Okay? If we take the moisture out of that, and this is simply a mathematical thing. It's not a nutritional thing, really. you know, it's more of a mathematical thing, and we take the moisture out, that may become, go from 8, the number becomes like 8.8%. So where we see differences in terms of like the moisture content and how that can affect it is if this grass is harvested maybe like as haylage, to where we're, you know, baling it where it has 50% moisture as opposed to we let it dry and it becomes 50% moisture, we let it dry and it becomes 10% moisture, that there's one thing is like at that higher moisture content, you may see some additional digestibility in that kind of a situation.
I was trying to understand that. So the moisture would have a bearing on the fibrous content of the hay itself.
It can have an effect on that.
That has to do with the storage and how you store it and all this other stuff.
Right. You can see some differences there. Okay. I'm gonna try to push this thing along. I really appreciate the questions. This is more valuable than what I have to say. Not only are the forages variable, but what the animals require are variable too. Every single cattle operation has got numerous groups within your operation. Dry pregnant cows, newly calved, open cows, bred cows nursing young calves, bred cows nursing big calves, bred cows later second to third trimester calves have been weaned, developing heifers that are open, developing heifers that are bred, developing bulls and mature bulls. Every one of those groups has got, at any given point in time, has got a different set of nutrient requirements. Okay, nobody in the world thinks that you're going to go out there and sort your herd into that many different groups. I've known people that have tried, and they've kind of driven themselves crazy on that. But what I'm just saying this is that just like your forage requirements or your forage supply, nutrient supply from your forages changes, so do like whatever stage of production your cow herd is in changes as well. Now, if we look at breeding and calving seasons, spring, fall, year-round, we need to take that into consideration. With operations that have a year-round breeding and calving season, again, this is my dad, this is the farm that I grew up on, developing and managing an accurate nutrition program is challenging. And the main reason is because you have multiple production classes of cattle that are in place at any given point in time. Because, you know, like if you're calving year-round, you know, you see all those groups that we talked about, you got some of all of those at any given point in time. In calculating the average nutrient requirement for that cow herd, there's a great deal of variability, meaning that you're overfeeding a bunch of cattle, you're underfeeding a bunch of cattle. You're hard-pressed to find those mean numbers. Okay. Again, this goes back to the efficiency thing we were talking about. It's a much lower degree of operational efficiency. And it makes a case for limited breeding season where cattle are managed and the nutritional program is based on lower variation. 60 to 90 day spread in the status of individual animals makes it much simpler to manage the nutritional program. Now, additionally, in breeding animals are grouped into pastures based on production stage, you can supplement them a whole lot more accurately than if not. All right, remember the curve I was showing you a while ago? Okay, here's that curve of your forage supply, and then these numbers are the crude protein requirements based upon a spring calving herd. That's this line right here, and the crude protein requirements for a fall calving herd, which are this set of numbers. So right during this period of time, here in April to late July, early August, or right from here to here, for the most part, we're providing all the protein that is needed from the forage base. But outside of that, from here on, whether you're fall calving or spring calving, you're not. They're not going to get everything they need from the forage base. So keep those numbers in mind, particularly if that's kind of what your production program is like, if you're either fall or spring calving. Okay, so based on this, we see that the ability of the forage base to provide for the nutrient need of the herd varies, and a lot of that is based upon time of year. The thing to consider is that a chart similar to the one we just looked at can be created for every nutrient that the cow requires. The main nutrients we require are protein, energy, minerals, and vitamins. Those are the main four that we have to be paying attention to. For a typical cow herd with reasonably decent hay, in those periods of time like we looked at where the forage base is not providing for the nutrient levels that they need, if you provide for the protein that animal needs, and here's something that you need to be keeping in mind, is that when we're feeding these cows, we're not feeding the cow. We are, but we're not. We're feeding all the bugs in the rumen. And that's the one thing that you have to take in mind, because in a little bit we'll talk about you being grass farmers, but you're not just grass farmers. You're brewmasters. Because the rumen of a cow is a big fermentation vat. You've got billions and billions of bacteria just for every ounce of rumen fluid that you've got. You've got protozoa, you've got fungi, and what you're doing is you're feeding that bug population. Because everything that the cow absorbs for the most part is what has been processed by that bacterial population. So the point being is that's the other thing. And where I was going with this is, if you meet the protein requirements for those rumen bacteria, for that cow, for the most part, not completely, but for the most part, you're going to meet an awful lot of the energy requirements for that cow. Because if you're making the rumen bugs happy, they're working hard, they're breaking down all the forage and the fiber that you're feeding that animal and extracting the energy out of that. So that's one thing that you need to keep in mind, is that if you hit the protein levels for the most part, energy comes with that. You know, again, not across the board, and you can do it better, but for the most part. Okay. Again, you can that same curve, that same set of lines comparison can be done for every single nutrient that we feed. And that's when we get into, like I said, we talked about protein, we talked about energy, but when we talk about minerals, we got a whole list of minerals we're talking about. When we talk about vitamins, we got vitamin A, D, and E, you know, that we talk about as well. And if you're really ambitious, you can create separate calendars for all the different animal classes and for all the different nutrient classes. Well, now you're talking about a book that's probably about 300 pages long, and nobody does that. So, the one thing that I want to just emphasize here is I look at this in a very practical manner. I know what we can do, I know what we can't do, and nobody has the time to do this kind of stuff, except maybe like the engineers in our group. Okay. So we're matching the forage base and the animal crunch. We know that the nutrients these animals require include protein, energy, minerals, and vitamins. We talked about that. The levels of these forage base is going to change over time based upon moisture content, fertilization, plant maturity, grazing patterns, you name it. We're going to maximize it. We want to maximize the use of growing and farm-produced forages because, for the most part, that is the most economical. If you have a good way to get your forages harvested, more than likely what you produce on the farm is going to be the most economical. We get into adverse environmental conditions, drought, cold, moisture. That can reduce the availability of those homegrown forages, but in general, the goal of accessing what's immediately available should be a top priority, as the fact of becoming a grass farmer needs to be on the top of your list. We grow grass, and we harvest it and sell it in terms of pounds of beef. So keep that in mind. You know that what you're really doing, you're not running cows, you're growing grass. And becoming a student of forage production and management will go a long way in improving your cattle performance and operational efficiency. What I have told an awful lot of people that I have worked with, when we start talking about, they ask me about, okay, what do I need to be doing in terms of forage production and doing that type of thing, I tell them, I'm a nutritionist. I'm not an agronomist. Let's get an agronomist on board to talk about this kind of stuff. All right. This is probably, from the forage production standpoint of it, the most important thing that I want to talk about to you this morning. The forage sampling and analysis, it needs to be a constant part of your program. begin sampling pastures. And this is not just going out and taking a random hay sample every once in a while. This is going out there and sampling your grasses so that you understand what you're growing. The analysis will go into the development of a forage nutrient database. And this is stuff that you need to track year after year after year, because no 2 years are the same. 1 year you're going to have 30% more moisture than you did the year before. It's going to change the nutrient values in your forages that you produce. You want to maintain these numbers over time so that you can develop and track average nutrient values for specific forages during specific periods of time. For instance, nutrient values for hay cut and baled in June of every year. Not only that, if you are producing hay on multiple fields, or if you have a very large field that maybe has differing soil types in it, you want to sort that hay apart and sample each one of those so that you can understand, in this area of this particular hay meadow, we routinely produce lower quality coastal Bermuda grass, or whatever the case might be. Each cutting should be sampled and tested. The analysis needs to be recorded along with the conditions, in other words, your fertilization records, moisture conditions, maturity, things like that. And you want to develop a relationship with a good forage lab. There's tons of forage labs all over the United States. And we have one that we work with pretty regularly. Actually, we have a couple of them that we work with pretty regularly. And it's money well spent. Okay. Now, the one thing, and I really don't care how small of an operation that you have, is you need a good forage probe, a good hay probe. This is one that I've got one like this that rolls around underneath the seat of my truck. I've had it for 20 years or so. It's still as sharp today as it was 20 years ago. And these cost about $125. There's any number of other different types that you can buy, but this is one of the best tools you can invest in. And that's what it looks like when it's not extended out. And seeing that we're running a little short of time, so I'm going to try to press through a couple of things that are important. This is kind of what the forage analysis submission form looks like. You can submit, you can use a form, and this is one that we use. And these are all the nutrient values that you get back from that. This is what that analysis looks like. We talked about the wet or the as-fed values and the dry matter values. If we go in and we look at crude protein, that particular sample on this hay that we sampled was 7.62%. When you take the moisture out of it, it's 8.9%. So it's just simply a mathematical thing. All right, so how do we meet the requirements? In other words, before we can meet requirements, we've got to know what they are. So how do we figure that out? One way is to obtain a copy of the Beef NRC. The newest one was printed out in 2016. They run around $100. And again, except for maybe the engineers in our group, you're probably not going to want to spend all the time that it takes to go through that and understand how all those calculations work out. Honestly, your best bet, fastest bet, develop a relationship with a good nutritionist, a good qualified nutritionist. And there's any number of them out there. Local or national feed companies will have one. There'll be some independents rolling around. They can be assistance in developing and tracking a lot of that information, and they can help you build that complete nutritional program for the entire herd. So aside from the NRC, the other thing to do, you can go online. And some of the different universities have cranked out basically sets of tables that show, you know, what these values are. And they have simplified the NRC. Again, what we want to do to meet the requirements and estimating demand, kind of develop that delivery and nutrient requirement calendar. It can be done pretty quick and easy on an Excel spreadsheet. Main thing is to put in writing somewhere so it can be tracked and use it to develop your plan. And be sure to include all the nutrients. This is going to be a work in progress. It's not going to be something that you're going to do today and you'll never change it again. It'll be different every year. Something I wanted to be sure and take into consideration and talk about here is if whether you're running purebred cattle or you're running crossbred cattle, there are differences depending upon what the what the nutrient needs of those animals are, because of, say, things like average birth weight of calves and average peak milk. I can tell you that a Bronvay cow that's giving 26.5 pounds of milk requires a little more protein and energy than an Angus cow where she's producing 17.6 pounds of milk. Now, this gets complicated when we're talking about crossbreds, you know, Angus and Black Baldy cows or Charolais and Angus or things like that, but you have to take into consideration what your breed effects are. And from the standpoint of how big those calves are when they produce them and how much milk that they're able to give. Okay, talk just real second about when you're building that your program. I like to start with the mineral part of your program. And the one thing that I tell people is start with a good, loose, free choice mineral. Don't cut it with salt, and do not use mineral blocks. I mean, you could put a brick out there and let them lick on a brick, and they'll get about the same amount of nutrients out of it. I'm serious. Do not assume that because your local feed store sells a given product that it meets your operation's needs. Just because they sell it doesn't mean that it's what works on your farm. You need to develop relationships with multiple suppliers in order to get the most cost-effective program. The other thing on minerals is that they can be fairly expensive. You can easily spend $40-$50 a bag on a mineral, but that you don't have to spend that kind of money. You can buy this in this day and time. You can find a pretty good quality mineral for $20 to $23. Talking about just the different nutrients on the mineral side of things, here's all of the, like, when I sit down and I build a mineral program for somebody, I'm looking at all of this. I'm looking at all of these and trying to meet the requirements here. What I'll tell you is that this comes off of one of those NRC tables that I was telling you about. These numbers, nobody uses these numbers, because for the most part, you have a set of conditions in your operation that make a lot of this probably less than what you really need. Okay, several things to keep in mind. After minerals, we want to consider protein. It's a very primary nutrient since it's a part of everything, for that matter. Required for muscle development, required for milk production, required for, you know, anything is part of the animal physiology. Protein supplementation compared to forage supplies vary the greatest throughout the years. Here's something I just wanted to show you real quick. This is on a 1,200-pound mature, just a crossbred cow. This is the difference in dry matter intake across 1 month after calving, 3 months, 5 months, 6 months. And you can look at, when we're talking about protein, you can look at the difference in protein requirements. A cow that's actually milking or still lactating for a 7-month-old calf, her protein requirements are really not very high because that calf really isn't milking all that much on her. You might see that big old thing standing out there beside her, but she's not really giving it. He's not really getting all that much milk. But again, we look at crude protein, total digestible nutrients, net energy levels. We still probably use TDN more than we do just about anything else, and then calcium and phosphorus. Different types of supplements, probably range cubes are one of the most common. Range meals that are cut with salt are very common. Commodities such as corn gluten feed or whole cotton seed, and then tubs and liquid feeds are basically our main protein supplies that we use. Okay, the other thing to take into consideration is that protein supplements also provide energy, minerals, and vitamins. So if you have a mineral program and you're feeding a protein supplement of some type or another, you need to take both of those into consideration, because it's not hard to overfeed something because you're not compensating or taking into consideration maybe what that range cube or that tub has in it. Different products have different considerations for use. The form's not that important, but you need to base your selection on cost. And the one thing that I tell people every single day is cheapest is not the best. If you run across a particularly cheap product, whether it is a liquid, whether it's a tub, whether it's a range cube, you need to ask yourself, why is that product so cheap? There has to be a reason. And the thing is, because everything's built based on market prices, formulations, manufacturing, things of that nature, there's a reason it's that cheap. So you need to take that into consideration. Labor required. Okay, if you're going to feed whole cottonseed, it's going to take a whole lot more labor than if you have a tank sitting out there where some guy is putting liquid feed in it for you, you know, every couple of weeks or something like that. Equipment needed. Sometimes you don't. If you're feeding tubs, you drive out there, you throw the tub out there, and all the equipment that you needed was your pickup truck, which you got anyway, and then what are you going to do with that plastic tub once it's all said and done with? There's nothing there. If you want to feed whole cottonseed, you're going to have a trough, you're going to have a front-end loader, you're going to have a way to handle it and manage that. And so, and plus, the labor is a whole lot more intensive. It takes more time for you to do that. That is one thing in working with different producers that we always struggle with, because folks don't account for their time. They don't account for the fact that it takes me 12 hours per week in order to just feed my cows, something like that. You need to take that into consideration as well. And then whatever storage you may need. I believe I'm probably running over time. Okay.
9:20.
Okay. So we've got a few. We're kind of coming down to the wire. This is what I tell people. Not only just because of what we talked about earlier, where we said, you know, simple to complex or whatever the case might be, but keep your program as simple as is feasible to do. Because, again, we need to take into consideration how much labor we're putting into it, but we also need to take into consideration of what a really, really complicated system is doing to us nutritionally. Unless you're hand-fed, if given access to multiple supplement choices, intakes of individual supplements is going to vary significantly. That's probably the biggest challenge that I deal with on a daily basis working with feeding a cow herd, is if I'm feeding anything, especially anything that's self-fed, like for instance, if I'm feeding a free choice mineral in a feeder out there, and maybe I'm feeding a tub or something else, keep in mind that anything that where the cow is making her own choices in terms to how much she's going to eat, intake is going to be all over the board. Because one day she's going to go out there and eat three times what she's supposed to, the next day she won't touch it. So this whole thing of, they eat a quarter pound per head per day of a free choice mineral, yeah, over the course of 3 months, that may be the case. So when you're evaluating that type of thing, don't try to do it on a week-to-week basis. Give it a longer period of time. But the problem that we run into with this, and you can't force feed them, because you're not going to walk out there with a spoon and go, okay, here's your quarter pound and here's your quarter pound, that type of thing, is the fact that if you have 50 or 100 cows in a pasture, you're going to have a biological intake curve. Probably the majority of those animals are going to eat about what they need. But you're going to have that end of the curve that they eat three times more than they're supposed to, and you got the ones on this end down here that aren't eating anything. And those are the ones that are probably going to give you the problems a lot of the times. All right, best case for a winter feeding program, this is typical. Now, you guys said that y'all are feeding stockpiled grasses. This wouldn't apply to y'all. But you're feeding a good quality grass hay, which is essentially what you're doing, you know, same thing. You're feeding a mineral supplement year-round. Minerals need to be kept out year-round. Don't try to time it because you can't. Keep it out year-round, and your average intake for a good product is going to be about 3 to 4 ounces per head per day. Protein supplement when they need it. And this goes back to tracking your forages and knowing what your forages contain. And making sure that, I mean, if you had a really good year and your hay is testing 12%, you probably don't need to feed a range cube or anything like that. You can if you want to, but I'm just telling you, you may be spending money you don't need to spend. But you don't know that until you test it. That's my whole point. I can look at hay samples all day long, and even on a good day, I can't tell you what that content is just by looking at it. And it's complicated by adding additional sources. Again, looking at this, and we want to supplement when we need to supplement. These periods of time. But remember that going across the year, you need to have mineral supplementation in place. Again, we talked about the fact that protein supplements provide other nutrients as well. Energy, carbohydrates, fibers, and starch are from fat. Let me take a second to talk about fat supplementation. Fed correctly, fat can be one of your best tools in your nutritional program, because it can go a long way toward enhancing reproduction performance. It can go a long way toward enhancing milk production. It can go a long way just in providing for that extra amount of energy that those cows need. The point being is that so many of the commercial products that are out there really don't do the job in terms of fat content. If you're familiar with liquid feeds, you know, you'll see, like say for instance, a typical liquid feed is going to be 35% protein, 3% fat. Well, then the next guy comes down the road and knocks on your door and goes, oh, I got a 35% protein and 5% fat. That difference in fat at that level is inconsequential. If you want to talk about products that are going to give you 10% fat or 12%, that type of thing, then you're starting to talk about something. So, you know, if you got somebody that's trying to sell you product because they got 2 percentage points more of a fat, is, you know, it's not saying much. So that's another one of my soapbox things. Minerals and vitamins, macromins, micromins, vitamin A, D, and E. One comment I'll make real quick. If you have noticed, if you're feeding minerals or if you're already buying feeds of some type or another over the course of this feeding season, your price and cost have probably gone up based upon your vitamin content. Whether or not you realize this or anybody has explained it or not, surprisingly enough, the base components for manufacturing vitamins A and E have come out of two plants in the world. One's in Germany, one's in China. The one in Germany got shut down because they had a big fire. The one in China got shut down because they had environmental issues all over the place, which is not unusual in China. But the point being is the amount of A and E that could be produced over the last 2 or 3 months has been extremely limited. We're going in and working with our customers, and we're saying, okay, for a short period of time to help save you some cost, we're cutting the vitamin A and E levels down. Those cows will be okay, especially this time of the year when green grass is coming on. But when we get farther down and the vitamin levels, vitamin numbers, the cost come down a little bit, then we'll raise those back up. But right now, vitamin A and E compared to last fall are probably 50 times higher than they were previously. So it is, ma'am? That's what's causing it right now. We've been through this before that has caused a spike in minerals because phosphorus cost was crazy. And the problem that we run into is when something like that happens and costs go up, they never come back down to where they were to begin with. So I'm just telling you. And the thing is, on the vitamins, on those two vitamins, we're probably looking at this fall before those are going to be back in line. So just going to keep that back in mind. Okay, need to account for all your sources to prevent overfeeding. Now, here's something I get lots and lots and lots of questions about, is all the bells and whistles that you can add into your mineral program or feeding program. These are various tools that are out there, all of which work if you handle them, use them properly. Probably one of the biggest ones, one of the main ones, is fly control, using either Altacid, or you hear it referred to as IGR, or Raybon. Using fed through, in other words, you can add it to your supplement and feed it through that way, works really, really well. The problem is your neighbor doing it? Because you can eliminate your fly population, but if your guy next door isn't doing anything with his, you know, they say a horn fly can fly a mile, you know, or more. So that's part of the problem. I generally recommend for people, if they're doing a fly control program, just using the IGR products is not quite enough. You probably need to be tagging or doing something else to give you a really good, complete thing. Flies are probably one of the biggest sucks, for lack of better terminology, biggest nutrient suckers that are out there, because they drink so much blood out of that animal. Next, 5 minutes. Very good. Antibiotics. This is another soapbox, and because it aggravates me so badly, I'm not even going to go there. Back in the first part of 2017, we had the new veterinary feed directive, which means that anytime you want to feed CTC in any shape, form, or fashion, you got to get a vet prescription to do that. I'm going to leave it at that. I love the veterinarians that I work with, and frankly, the majority of them that I work with, pardon my language, but are pissed off about this too, because it takes an awful lot of their time to have to deal with this thing. But anyway, you still can use CTC. You just have to have a script. Ionophores. You've heard of Rumensin, Bovatec, GainPro. These help improve feed efficiency. You can use them on pasture. You can use them if you're feeding, say, feeding heifers, feeding bulls, and it will do a nice job of increasing feed efficiency in those cattle. This is a product we have fed yeast for years. But the thing is, now that we're into this situation where we're limited on CTC and antibiotics, and we have the whole push to reduce antibiotics, the use of yeast products are getting new attention, because there's things right here that you can do with yeast products that help with enhancing immune response, help reduce stress in cattle, that we just got done with a study over here at Texas A&M Commerce, and we didn't see a whole lot on, and these were on transition cattle. We had weaned them, put them in a pen, and looked at how they did in gain, looked at how they did on health response. Didn't see much of anything in gain performance, but we saw a 70% reduction in death loss. We saw a 50% reduction in sick pulls. We saw a 50% reduction in medicine cost. And to me, and the only thing that was different in those two groups was the yeast product that we used. So there's definitely something there. And then there's other products. Essential oils, you guys, I would be willing to bet that half the ladies in here are using some kind of an essential oil product in some shape, form, or fashion. The one thing I'll mention about essential oils, because my wife, and she's not here at the moment, she tried to do this, is if you use essential oils in diffusers, you can potentially kill your cat, because cats are allergic to a lot of the essential oil. She tried to do that. Fortunately, the cat didn't die. But essential oils are being used as rumen modifiers, because they change how those bacteria function in the rumen. So those are products that can be used as well. Winter feeding program, I'm going to do this real quick, and we're going to wrap this thing up. If we're feeding it hay, like the hay that I showed you on that analysis, 1,100-pound crossbred cows, 30-day-old calves, dry matter intake of about 21 pounds. All right, the amount of protein in terms of pounds is 1.81 for that cow. That's how much it supplies, excuse me. The cow requires 2.6. So we're missing 0.79 pounds of protein for that animal. If we want to feed a supplement at 2 pounds per head per day, that supplement is going to have to be on a dry matter level 39%, but actually it's going to have to be almost 45% protein if you're going to feed a 2-pound supplement to meet those requirements. If you're going to feed a 4-pound supplement, about 22%. So this is much more reasonable in order to meet those needs. On the TDN, or the energy levels, you essentially can't reach the energy levels with a 2-pound fed supplement unless you're going to feed a bunch of fat. If you feed a bunch of fat, you can get it done. But on like a 4-pound supplement requiring, that'll have 63% of TDN, yeah. So in a situation like this, with this kind of a hay supply, you need to look at a protein supplement that looks something like that right there. You can do that with whatever your hay supply looks like. Thoughts to keep take with you. Every cattle operation is different. The basis of your nutritional program is forage. Forage nutrient levels change over the course of a year. Ongoing forage testing is a must. Nutrient needs of the animal change over the course of the year. Proper planning means regular comparison of feed and of supply and demand. There are a lot of different sources. Keep the program as simple as possible. Calculate the supply and include forage in all supplements, and establish the basis of your nutrition program and review on a regular basis. Folks, that's all I've got for you. I'm happy to take some questions. I think we're out of time. I apologize for running a little bit long. Like I said, this was 100 years worth of stuff that we were trying to cram into it. Our name and phone number, email address is on there. If I can ever help you, give me a shout. If you've got any questions, give me a shout. Be glad to help. So thank you very, very much.